Well, Max Verstappen has done it. He has broken his Monza curse. And once again, Mighty Max claims his maiden win at Monza. Welcome to episode 231 of Grid Talk. Today we are here to discuss the 2022 Italian Grand Prix. My name is Tom, and joining me we have Sophia Richmond from Everything F1.
Hi.
Hi, Soph. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. And yourself?
I'm very well, thank you, especially after that win. And then and then we also have double trouble in the shape of Warren Shaw.
Hello.
And Rachel from the Paddock Pals podcast.
Hi.
Hello, both. Just before we begin, if you enjoyed this podcast, we would love it if you could take five to leave us a five-star rating on Spotify or a five-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you do, you'll automatically go into our monthly draw to win a Grid Talk t-shirt from our champion range of merch. Also, if you're one of the 72% of people who are not yet subscribed to the channel, please consider helping us out with a like and a subscribe. Now that the admin's out of the way, let's get into the juicy bits. So, 2022 Monza, that aforementioned curse has struck again for the previous year's race winner, but we'll get into that in a bit. Just before we get into the drivers, I do just want to touch briefly on how respectful the minute silence was following the death of Her Majesty Elizabeth II. I know we said it yesterday, but the minute silence that Monza held in memory of Her Majesty was, you could hear a pin drop through the TV. So I'd just like to say a big well done and a big thank you to everyone at the track and everybody watching, everybody broadcasting. Really, really well done. So, moving into it, Sophia, Max finally claimed that long-awaited Italian victory, and the first time he stood on the podium in Monza as well.
Yeah, I mean, given what happened last season and the events that kind of unfolded, I think it was definitely well-deserved. He did race quite well. It was interesting as well, leading up to the race, I think Rachel was interviewing him and she was like saying about how he was on the books to win. And he was kind of taken back about it because this track has been deemed undrivable to overtake. It's difficult to overtake. It's the tempo of speed. So obviously you're going to have a lot of opportunities to potentially overtake, but for some reason it's never been done. But this race today, like so many overtakes, even in some corners that we thought were impossible for two cars to get past at the same time. But it was a good race for him. And again, like you said, first podium in Monza. We'll see if the curse as well for next season still stays. Judging by your face, hopefully not. But yeah, it was a good race for Max. And points needed. Obviously, he could win the race come to Singapore in 2 weeks' time, which is a great lead to have as well. And I think that will change a record as well for the most, I think it's like the winners to, quickest amount of time to win the title, the world championship title as well, if he is to win it in Singapore.
Yeah, no, it was quite a drive from Max today, even though he started P7, an old Dutch fourth row of the grid today, which we'll get onto later on. He was sniffing Leclerc's gearbox by about lap three. So it was, I think the writing was on the wall for Ferrari at that point. But just behind him, Rachel, is the aforementioned Charles Leclerc. Unfortunately, couldn't quite turn that pole position into a home victory today. I would say slightly unlucky, but he wasn't. He was just, well, in my mind, he was outdriven, but I would say that because I'm a Max fan. What's your sort of views on Leclerc from today?
I don't know if I would say so much he was outdriven, but I think that like the Red Bull just had the speed. It would have just been so difficult for Charles to win. I mean, it would have taken something like a restart with a red flag and an amazing drive at those last couple of laps. If that we would have been graced with that, but we were not. But yeah, I thought Charles did a great job today. He was obviously sad after the race. You can just see it in his face. Just a little, you know, a little blue, a little sad boy season for him. But, you know, the title is still in his midst, I guess. He could potentially get it. You know, it would take a lot, not just from him, but also from Red Bulls, a lot of mistakes for that to happen. But it was good that he at least got on the podium in Monza. And the Ferrari fans were out there cheering him on the whole time, and the flags and the whole, you know, fanfare of Ferrari in Monza was there. And so at least he had that support. But yeah, I think he just didn't have the Ferrari car, he just couldn't get there today. But, you know, he still had a solid race. And the Ferrari strategist didn't monumentally mess up. So that was good.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say if Ferrari would have messed up the strategy, they probably wouldn't have made it out of Monza alive. You know, they'd have probably been sort of driven out by pitchforks and sort of burnt at the stake.
But, tarred and feathered.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so yeah, you know, it's I do agree with you. It was a good race for Leclerc. I think it was as good as it was going to be, and I think the writing is on the wall a bit this season. I think there's been too much damage early on in the season for him to be chasing the title now. Mm-hmm. But let's see what next year brings. Eh? But behind him, Warren, rounding out our podium, Mr. Consistency of 2022, George Russell again in the top five, again on the podium. Thoughts?
I would say he got that was a fairly easy race for him. And then you could say that he got this podium because of the grid penalties that happened yesterday in qualifying. What, he got fifth? He was fifth in qualifying, I think, yesterday, and then moved his way up to second. So if there's no grid penalties, he probably doesn't work his way into a podium place here. But hey, George has been he's had his fair share amount of good luck, but I'm not going to say grid penalties is really good luck. So you could say good luck for you, but he ended up making it work, getting third. And yeah, he's really just been consistent this season. It's, he's outdriven Lewis. I think you have to say consistently, like, he got a grip to the car went much better early on. Lewis has come on strong lately, but if you're saying who's been the better of the Mercedes drivers this year, I think you definitely have to give it to George. And he's always up there.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point, actually. And again, I agree with you. I think George has been the stronger driver this season. But like you said, Hamilton is definitely coming on. So it's again, like you said, with the grid penalties, would he have been P3? For me, maybe not. But what do I know? I'm just a fanboy, evidently. So moving on to P4, just outside the podium, the resident Chile boy Carlos Sainz. Hell of a drive from him, I thought. I honestly thought at one point that he was in a position to take the race win, but then Ferrari says, "Do you know what? We'll just leave you up there on mediums and lol, good luck, hun."
Yeah, I mean, we joke about Ferrari strategies. I think this has probably been the better race for, like, strategies, given some of the dodgy calls and mistakes, especially last week, the three wheels that took place with Sainz. But it was a good race for him, and it was also good for the team, finishing P4, his teammate finishing P2, getting the points they needed for the constructors. I felt like it was a bit of a quieter race compared to everything else that was kind of going on. With other drivers for Carlos, he just kind of consistently put his foot down and had a good race for him. I think it's probably one of his better races this season so far at the moment, minus obviously the one that he won, but he did quite well and did well for the team. But yeah, that tire strategy, you saw with Monza, there's not that much degradation on the track, but there is still degradation. And like the fact that he was on it for quite a longer period of time than what a lot of us were thinking about, I don't know if it's maybe because of everything that was going on in front of him in the pit lane. Like, I feel like it probably should have come in a little bit earlier, like maybe about two or three laps earlier than what he pitted on. But other than that, I think it was quite a good race for him for sure.
Yeah, it was. Given that we're almost celebrating this strategy from Ferrari, just to show how interesting they've been for the whole year. They've just been, well, at one point they were a laughing stock, let's be fair. But no, let's at least give them some credit where she, you know, they made some good calls with the VSC pitting Leclerc, and obviously whatever they were going to do, Red Bull were going to do the opposite, and you know, so it's it was a bit of a no-win situation for them, I think. But Rachel, Lewis Hamilton, P5, bearing in mind he started P19, I believe, as he had a back-of-the-place grid penalty. I think it was only Yuki Tsunoda who started behind him. A very, very good drive, I thought, including that sensational overtake out of the start of Turn 1.
Yeah, no, I thought Lewis had a really good drive. And I think if you were to watch him the entire race, you would have had a really good show. But of course, you know, the broadcast's always just the front. But yeah, and then of course there was the potential PTSD that he was experiencing with the looming red flag that he overcame. He had a lot of words after the race about, oh, this maybe would have happened, or Abu Dhabi. Yeah, everyone asked the question. You know that they did. So, but his drive, I thought he had a really great drive, and it was impressive.
Yeah, he, at first I thought, oh, maybe he's not making up places, but then next thing you know, he was in the points, and yeah, he was driving a bit like the Hamilton of old, I thought. As everybody knows, I'm not the biggest fan of him, but It was nice to sort of see him, you know, doing that double overtake out the exit turn one. Oh wow, that was I did grin to myself. I thought that was nice, but yes. Then P6 Warren, the Mexican Minister of Defense, and someone who probably gives Hamilton nightmares sometimes, Sergio Perez. Bit of an interesting race for him. You know, he appeared to have brake issues after he pitted the first time. He locked up quite heavily going into the pits. Put the hards on. The hards didn't work. Then his brakes were smoking like an Italian grandma. And then, he just, you know, ultimately ended at P6, but doesn't quite tell the whole story, I don't think.
No, I still think it was impressive drive from him, dealing with how he had the coast. I heard him after the race, he had to lift and coast a lot to cool the brakes down for like two or three laps after that. How his strategy got pretty much shot when the brakes were going like that. Because when those hard tires went on for Perez, everybody watching the race day, he's not pitting again. How far up is he going to make him the order? He's a master with the tires. So how many people is he going to catch and pass and all that stuff? Because we've seen him do it time and time again. He just, whatever happened with the brakes and his flat spotting is what he said, I think, is what caused it early on. It was just, he was unlucky, but then still to get sixth, I thought it was pretty good. I said on our episode this past week, I needed to see something from Perez this week, because he's been, I know he got second in Belgium, but other than that, he really has been kind of way off the pace since France. Like, he has not looked like the same driver since France. So he needed to get some good positive momentum for him. And I'd say this, with even though his struggles, it was kind of a step in the right direction. It's a solid drive. He wasn't thrilled after the race, but for everything that went wrong, it was probably the best he could have done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if we wouldn't have had the red flag, bearing in mind he just slapped on a new set of softs, I think he probably would have had Hamilton. You know, he was certainly gunning for it, and not the red flag. That's my wishful thinking. The safety car, I should say. So when that came out for the Chicken McLaren, I think that rather hampered his final stint, or his sort of last charge, if you like. Speaking of McLarens, Lando Norris, P7. So Lando had an awful start. He really bogged down. I don't know if he hit anti-stall,
yeah,
or what, but yeah, he got swallowed up going into turn one. Bit of a scrappy race, because he sort of went off at turn one a few times, and he got done a bit with a slow pit stop, but a good recovery drive, even if it wasn't the most sort of smooth sailing of days.
Definitely, yeah. So he anti-stalled, and literally, I think it's also because of how good the other drivers got off the line, like Gasly, Hamilton, and all that, Gasly and a few others as well. I think it kind of made it look a little bit more bad than it probably was. But he had some good battles. Like, I mean, my comment earlier with him and Gasly going into the turns where obviously we saw Max and Lewis last season making out alive, I found it was quite funny. But there's some good battles that he did take place. Obviously, he didn't DNF, which is part of the Monza curse, where normally both of the drivers of the winning team from previous season DNFs. So good thing, good points as well, given as well that Alpine had one DNF as well this race. So good for the constructors battle between McLaren and Alpine. But yeah, damage limitations, I think, for a bad start. The minute that happened, we kind of knew that it wouldn't be like a absolute best race for Lando, but he still got the points. He still finished all right and didn't DNF.
Yeah. Absolutely. It was a good sort of recovery race for him. And very good point you mentioned about the constructors as well, because Alpine are now on 125 points. McLaren are on 107. So there's only 18 points between them. So that P4 is all to play for. And also, when Mercedes overtake Ferrari for P2, don't forget Ferrari will be in that fight as well. That's for you, JR, if you're listening. That's my friend in America, who's a very big Ferrari and Chucky Leclerc fan. Moving down the grid, Rachel, we have Pierre Gasly, P8. I would say, bear in mind, I'm trying to be impartial, I'd say solid, if not unspectacular for him today. He had a decent qualifying, I thought, and then just sort of held his nerve in the race. He was on hards for a bit, I believe. So the hards, obviously, we saw they didn't work today. But all in all, I thought he had quite a good day. How do you think he got on?
I think he's going to have nightmares of Daniel Ricciardo's rear wing. I think if you gave him a piece of paper, he could draw it exactly as he saw it for a lot of the race. He was just stuck in a train, like completely stuck in there. And when that happens, it's just like, you don't even get to see them drive because nobody cares. It's just a DRS train and there it goes. He was stuck in that a lot, but yeah, you had a fine day. It was good to see him back in the points. That was good. He seemed really happy about that, but yeah, he was just looking at Daniel the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, whether you would want to chase the rear wing of that McLaren, it's a different story given their relative pace. But yeah, it was when I saw that Danny Rick was leading the DRS train, I instinctively went to look for Alonso, but couldn't find him. So I thought, oh well, how the tables have turned. it was weird seeing a DRS train that wasn't headed up by Alonso, but that's because he took inspiration from his new team and decided to DNF. Instead of DRS, he went DNF. Begins with D and instead of three-letter analogy. Not quite the same. Anyway, this is the one I really want to get into. Nyck de Vries, his F1 debut, having driven a different car on Friday. I mean, granted, it was Aston Martin. It's like saying, what track did you want to drive? Jumps into the Williams, puts it into Q2 and finishes with 2 points. Warren, what can we say?
I mean, they should give him a contract right on the spot, right? Like, I know that's not how this really normally goes, but if we're just in a results-based business here, like, no training, too, for the race. Like, obviously, he's not up to, like, race stamina. He said his shoulders were killing him at the end of the race. Obviously, P9 is – or P9, quite impressive. I think getting out of Q1 might be even more impressive than what he did in the race, just because that he didn't even get FP3. Like, the first laps he did in Q1 were just – those were the first time he drove the Williams in. And, I mean, really sensational stuff. He's 27, right, I think?
I think he's the same age as me, yeah.
He – looks like he's about 22 years old. There's no, I need a birth certificate check. He looks so young. There's no way he is 27, but no, just incredible. I mean, it really is like, and then you got to look at the other side of Latifi, like, God, it's really a heartbreaker for him. Like, it just shows, like, you're either fast or you're not. Like, it's car with the, you either have the speed in you or you don't, and he just doesn't have it in him. And it's like, that's the other side you got to look at. Like, it's tough, but I mean, that's what it is. But DeVries, I mean, quite impressive. He did get called in the steward's office though at the end for unsafe driving, they said, but it was only a reprimand, so he didn't get a penalty, so he sticks P9. And I will say, look, one race, he's gonna probably get 20th in the championship. I chalked that up as a successful season. That's, you beat 22, he beat two drivers this year in the championship. That's pretty good for probably only having one race.
Yeah, and Sof texted me during the race and said that he's already ahead of Latifi in the championship, and it's like he's done one race, he scored 2 points, and you know, Gotifi has finished a high of P12. And I do agree with what you said as well. This is a results based business, and it's I mean, you can't get much better of an audition than that, can you? You know, it's just, I would like to see him on the grid next year. I think he deserves it. I said this yesterday. I think him and Albon next to each other in that Williams, that team can go places. Get both of them tied down on multi-year contracts. Get Latifi out the door. He's garbage. We've seen it. Goodbye, son. I mean, he's probably absolutely, you know, doo-dooing himself anyway after seeing someone come in and take take points on his F1 debut, having driven a different car. Well, just two days prior.
Like, if you're Williams, how can you not, like, obviously the seat's in question. They're like, oh, maybe we're sticking around Latifi because we want to wait for Logan Sargeant. If you really want Logan Sargeant, and you have no business bringing him in rather than DeVries, who just said, I could just come out of pretty much off the street right now. Yeah. With pretty much from the Mercedes garage right into your car, and I can get you ninth at Monza. I mean, as you said, what else does he need to prove?
Bear in mind, DeVries was in Mercedes hospitality doing a Hulkenberg where he's having cappuccino and cake, and then he gets the call and he has to lunge down the grid to Williams, and he gets in and does that yesterday and does this today. I mean, yeah, I mean, Jos Capito before the race, when I think Simon Lazenby managed to grab him for a minute and said, what have you got planned for next season, basically? And Jos says, we've got plenty of options and we've got time and all the rest of it. If I just, seeing that race today, I'd be emailing, the race manager saying, hey, Boo, how you fix for a seat next year? Because how could you not? I know we talked a lot about a Williams driver, and for once it's good, which is nice.
Well, so, we might be in Singapore as well, given, because we don't know how long Albon's recovery is, because it could be, I think they said minimum 2 weeks, maximum a month, depending on how it goes. So we could still see him in Singapore, and I think that'll be the bigger test of Nick as well, because that track, not been done since 2019.
If you could do it in Singapore.
If you can get like top 15 in Singapore, if he was to race, that's another nail in the coffin in Latifi's case.
I think it'd be really hard for Alex to be ready to race. Like, recovery is one thing, but being able to drive an F1 car, that'll be, I mean, think about like your recovery and pulling on your stitches and all that. Like, I just don't see him, like, if he does it, like, that would be great, but he's going to be in a ton of pain and ill after that. Yeah. So I think there is like a decent chance that we could see Nick again, which I mean, really sad for Albon, but I wouldn't be mad about it. Seeing him go one more time. That would be, I mean, just to talk about him a little bit more, I don't want to take too much time, but like, he's had a great like pre-Formula One record, like all the things that he's done, he's so accomplished, and seeing him sit in that Mercedes garage next to Toto, it's just it doesn't do him justice. You just want to see him on the grid, especially after today.
Absolutely. I fully agree. I did like when you could see him sitting next to Toto and they both had their jumpers tied around. It looked like I'll tell you what it looked like. It looked like Austin Powers and Mini-Me. That's what it. That's what it reminded me of. Seeing those two sitting next to each other.
It looked like bring your son to work today.
Exactly. Yeah, but no. De Vries deserves a shot at F1. I actually met him at 2016 in Hungaroring because a mate of mine was racing in GP3 that year. Because De Vries actually had a DNS for the feature race, and my mate won the feature race. So I met De Vries because his garage the next to us. He's a super down to earth guy, really, really, really nice. I was having a good chat with him about I'm nobody in that sense, but he was really nice, and he's quick as well. And he obviously won F2, he won Formula E. He's had a good weekend out today. He's a bit more mature because obviously he's that bit older, and obviously F1 drivers these days are barely out of nappies and they're into F1 cars. Just look at Tsunoda. I think someone coming in who's sort of 27, 28, my kind of age, I think that might be better, especially for a team like Williams who need that sort of bit more than a complete rookie, but not a sort of like massive multi-million pound contract. But yes, De Vries, well done. I really hope to see you again on the F1 grid. I think we'll see him in Singapore because, like you said with Albon, it's not just a recovery. Flying to Singapore when you've just had an operation as well, that might not be the best idea. And it's not going to hurt anyone to have De Vries in the car again, I don't think, apart from the TV. But anyway... let's move on, because someone who De Vries battled with and held off very well was the charging Zhou Guanyu. I thought he had quite a good day. Bearing in mind he was sort of up and down the grid a bit. Nice to see him back in the points. I did think at one point he was going to overtake De Vries, and I was sort of edging forward on my sofa, or my armchair rather, because I've moved the living room around. Nice to see him back in the points. Granted, it's only 1 point, but I think he needs this for a bit of consistency for himself. And obviously, Alfa Romeo, Italian team. I know that's for his base, but Italian team, all the rest of it.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this multiple times on podcasting. Like, he's becoming one of my favorite drivers. He has been quite consistent. Like, he is obviously not like George Russell and that kind of consistency, but what he's performing in that Alfa, granted, and as well, first season in the Alpha, he is doing so well. With the 3-4 DNFs that he's had, he would have had a lot more points. And yes, it's only 1 point, but it's still one more point than the next driver. Like, it's still helping with the battles for the drivers, for the Constructors' Championship. Also, solidifying his case for next year, because it's still not announced if he's going to be driving for Alfa Romeo next year. I feel like it's going to be stupid if they get rid of him, given how well he's been doing, how much of investment that he has. He needs a seat for next year, and I think it's going to be announced quite soon. I think they're going to wait until it's in Asia to make the announcement, potentially. I think, see how it goes with that. But really good race for him. The battles, I think they raced, both Nick and Zhou Guanyu, I think they raced in F2. In the year that Nick won as well, I think, if I can remember correctly. Because I know Zhou was in F2 for about 3 to 4 years, I think. So I think it was quite a nice little like F2 battle. Saw the clip afterwards as well, Zhou congratulating Nick as well for that race. But yeah, good race for him. Points needed. Doing the job for it, for Alfa Romeo.
Absolutely. And I fully agree with you that I think he deserves a seat next year. He does bring a lot of sponsorship money, as we know. I think they're probably just sorting out a couple of deals. And obviously, Audi, whatever they're going to be called between now and 2026, they've also got a lot of things which they're sorting out as well. We don't even know that Audi are going to Sauber, but they are. Where else are they going to go? Actually, Red Bull. Given the Porsche pulled out, hey ho. I think we'll see Joe on the grid next season. I agree with everything you just said, Joe. He's had a pretty consistent season. and he's getting better. Obviously, reliability hasn't helped, but that's, you know, hashtag just Ferrari things. Outside the points, we'll probably rattle through these quite quickly because there's not an awful lot worth talking about. Esteban Ocon, P11, Rach. I think people are expecting more from Alpine, but ultimately, I'll give you both Alpine drivers because Alonso obviously DNF'd with reliability issues.
Yeah, so Esteban, I did expect more for sure. I mean, finishing 11th when you have this car that has great straight line speed and you're in Monza, like you would think that this would be somewhere that they could just blow past everybody. Like, it just doesn't really make sense to me. And the car for him, at least, worked fine. Everything was fine. There was no issues that he was dealing with. And I guess you could say he just got caught in traffic, but I don't know, definitely expected more from the Alpine this week. And then Fernando DNF'd. I mean, I don't really have much to say. If anyone wants to take Fernando, go for it. But I don't have much to say.
No, to be honest, there's nothing to say about Alonso. He DNF'd as his car was overheating. And like I said, I think he just saw, oh, I'm going to Aston Martin. They've done a double in it. They've done a double DNF. Let me show you how good a whipping boy I am. And then he said, I'm going to DNF. So that's obviously what happens. And for anybody listening, that was sarcasm. just before people get the pitchforks out for me again. Mick Schumacher finished P12. Warren, anything to say on him or not really?
I will just say, I just saw this from Gunter. If I will let Gunter speak for me when it comes to Mick. I think they were not expecting a good race going into this weekend. It's just not the type of car or not the track that suits their type of car. So they were expecting a poor weekend. But Gunter had said that considering that Mick barely had any time during practice, his lack of track time, and where he started, he was very happy with P12. So you know what? I would say that's the way to look at it. Because if you really do think about it, Mick didn't have any. He was not on the track in FP1 because they decided to put Giovinazzi in there, and that, which doesn't make any sense unless you're trying to give him an audition for next year. But we don't need him we don't need him back in the grid. We don't need him back here. And then he's got the technical issue in FP2. He's got no track time. You know what? So fine weekend. I ever since Haas brought those upgrades to Hungary, they have just been in the toilet big time. Those, whatever happened there, the white Ferrari, whatever was being reported there, that has not materialized.
Yeah, that's you made a very good point, actually. And well, okay, I know Gunther said it, but I'll take the credit for it, Warren. Where he said obviously he sat out FP1 for Giovinazzi. I don't think that's an addition. I think that's just a publicity stunt, like I said yesterday. Italian driver, Italian. Home track.
Yeah.
That's just so the Tifosi can, you know, just pray and hope for something good to happen, which didn't. Unlucky. And then obviously, you know, had technical issues, and you know, he was sort of involved in that sort of gaggle of cars at the start, and yeah, just a P12, to be honest, not a bad result, given everything that happened.
He had a good battle with Latifi a few times, so overtaking, like going back and forth. That was like the only thing I remember of mixed racing today.
Battling with Latifi, is that something you really want to celebrate?
I mean,
it was a clean movie, did go around the outside.
Actually, I'm glad you mentioned that because I'd forgotten about that. That overtaking to turn one, he locks up his fronts, and I thought, oh my God. Yeah, I thought, oh my God, you're going to wipe out the Latifi. I mean, no great loss. And, you know, and I thought they were going to both end up on that escape road out of turn one. But the way he obviously stamped on the anchors, locked the fronts, and then let go of the brake, and he held it into turn one. That was a super move. That was full on Daniel Ricciardo 2016. That was. So I'm glad you mentioned that, actually. That was a really good move. Sorry, something's just broken behind me. I think the cats are running rampant again, and I just felt a dull thud and just like, what on earth was that? But yes, P13, Valtteri Bottas, he was a lap down. I mean, there's not really much to say about Bottas.
He finally finished a race. That's what you could say. He finished.
Yeah, well done. Yeah, now going to eat some porridge. Yuki Tsunoda, P14. I mean, he started back at the grid.
Finished.
Oh, God, here we go. Latifi. I mean,
the goat yet again.
The goat yet again. You know, saw he had a new teammate and he said, you know what? I won't get points. I'll let you take the points. So you can have a nice debut. That's what it was. That's just a Canadian in him. just being kind.
Hey, that's a top 15 finish. That's a top 15.
With how many DNFs, though?
You don't worry about that. You don't worry about that. Just look at where it's finished. He's not last in the classified finishers, which he's always the heavy favorite in the betting markets for. So that's a good start.
Oh, I should have put a bet on then, shouldn't I?
20 he's like always, out of 22. Like, well, 20 drive it. Good.
He is legitimately always minus like 200 to get last as a classified finisher, which is he's as big a favorite as Max is to win as he is getting last classified. That's how big a favorite he is.
Well, it's I've said this three times, but there are three things guaranteed in life: death, taxes, and the CFE qualifying P20. So he's actually done me dirty there because he's finished not last. Thanks for that.
I think him starting in P10 at the start of the race, I think that triggered him and be like, you know what? No, this is not for me. I'm just going to go back down to where I belong and go down to the back of the grid.
Yeah, I think basically he was sitting there going, ooh, pretty lights. And then they went out and he just went, oh, yeah. Yeah, and then everyone just went, meow. And then he was just, that was the end of it.
Not used to anybody coming from behind me. I'm just going to be the last one standing.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, he's out soon. Has to be. And then P16, K-Mag got given a 5-second penalty for overtaking Gotifi into turn one. I think it was for leaving the track and gaining an advantage. Even though he gave the position back, he said it wasn't done quickly enough. So not a great weekend for Haas all around. I'm not going to dive into any of them because it's probably not worth your energy. I do want to talk about Daniel Ricciardo, because I know I've ribbed him a lot, and obviously he's not had a very good season. He was on for a solid result today. He was on for a really, really good result. Because yesterday, my bold prediction, I said Danny Rick finishes ahead of Lando Norris. I thought at one point that was going to happen, especially when Lando had a slow pit stop. So I kind of remember what order we're in now. So, Rick, I'll just go to you. Danny Rick... I thought, like I just said, I thought he had a much improved day today. What did you think?
Not really. I think that spot where he started in was, I mean, he did whatever in qualifying, and then ton of grid penalties put him in that position, and then he led a DRS train. Great job, Daniel Ricciardo. Sorry, I don't mean to be like super mean about it, but like, He, if there's an episode on this in Drive to Survive, he's going to be like, oh, yeah, what? Look at me, so great. And then the next one, he's going to be like, I'm back. And then we're just not going to see this continue. So I don't know. Not to be a total Daniel Ricciardo hater, because I think he's a good guy. I just think it's time to go.
Yeah, I think he should head to NASCAR or something.
He would be great.
Yeah,
he'd be great in IndyCar and NASCAR. He would be great. I think he'd be happy. I think he would be happy.
Yeah, I think he's just fallen out of love with the sport, and the sport's fallen out of love with him. He's been in it, 10 and a half years now, or maybe even, was it midway through 2011 he made his debut? Or was it 2012? I think it's midway through 2012, because they had those three new teams, didn't they? HRT,
Virgin,
and Borussia. Anyway, because I know he made his debut at Silverstone, and I'm sure it was 2012 because it was when they, because it was that season. Okay, fair enough. Right, you went in on him then.
You should have gotten to someone else.
Go on, Warren.
I'm not a big Danny Rick guy. If you listen to our pod, you know that. But look, he hasn't made it out of Q1 or Q2 for a while. Getting into Q3. You know what? I think that's he put himself in a position to do well with the grid penalties, like what happened with Russell. Like if when you have these grid penalties and you get yourself into Q3, you're vaulting up past four people. So you're going to give yourself your margin of error in the race is greater to get some significant points, especially if you've been struggling. And he did that to an extent this weekend. And then like, what, I don't even know what happened with the car. Just they didn't, did they even say, I don't, it just, whatever, just they had to retire.
It was the curse.
Yes, it was the curse. Yeah. It was the curse. He was unlucky, but at least he got it in the Q3. It's a positive weekend, I guess, minus the result, the end result.
But we shouldn't be celebrating that because that was something that was consistently for him to get in.
No, right. I totally agree. I agree with that. But I'm just saying, if there are people out there, why aren't you saying anything nice? Here's something you could say about him. No, but he should be in Q3 every single time with the McLaren. He shouldn't be getting knocked out in those earlier what he's been doing. So like last week, 17th. No, that should not be happening. I agree with you.
Yeah. I think you should take a year out and then maybe try to come back in. I think because I've said that even last week as well. I don't see it being possible because how demanding these seats are. But look at like Ocon, look at Alex, like they've both taken a year out, come in, Kevin as well, taking a year out, come back and actually perform better than what they've done in previous seasons. I think that's probably the best thing for Daniel. But the issue as well, it's just that seat's going to be gone. Any team, because these F2 drivers and these F3 drivers are something else, and now you have IndyCar wanting drivers to come in into F1. I, like Rachel said as well, I think he'll do amazing on the other side of the Atlantic, and I think that's probably the best thing, because how F1's been treating him, and even like social media as well, I just feel like it's not the best place for him. And whereas IndyCar, which is still not big over this side in the UK and Europe, I think it's probably the best as well, because he's still getting to driving almost the same amount of races. It's not as demanding sometimes compared to F1 and all the kind of politics and legality that comes around with F1 and the fan bases that are quite toxic, but we'll see. But he's just completely given up, and who knows, we might even have some random people, not random, but might have some people stepping in for McLaren for free practices. I think they still need to do at least two free practices with some of the junior drivers, because they haven't done any yet. Maybe see someone step up for the actual race as well.
Yeah, also if he comes to the US, like, he's going to get movie deals, he's going to be going to the Met Gala, he's just like, there's going to be things for him here that I think would make him really excited and happy.
I can see him living in Texas. Like, he just loves that state so much.
I could see him living on like a big ranch outside of Austin. Bear in mind, that's what I want to do. With his Stetsons and his cowboy hat, and just,
you don't want to do it. You don't want to live on a big ranch outside of Austin.
To be fair, I'd probably rather live in a condo in Austin and just have everything there. I don't think they have fiber out there, so I need that.
He's got a house in LA.
Oh yeah. Well,
there we are. I think the writing's on the wall, and not just because of his driving. Before the Australian fans break up and start paying for my blood again.
All of us. Don't worry, we're right there with you.
Yeah, but I'm leading the pack today. So I'll shield you all from it. We also mentioned Alonso DNF'd. Not much to say. Stroll and Vettel both DNF'd. Vettel's engine just went bang. Had an awful lot of smoke coming out of it, and then he lost power. Stroll, they brought him in to retire. I wonder if they saw something that looks similar to what Vettel had. I haven't got an awful lot to add to that, unless anyone else has got anything to add.
There goes my bold predictions. I said double Aston Martin points and an Alpine top five. So it was the absolute opposite of that for me.
At least they were all together.
Apart
from Ocon, yeah. There's not too much to add about that. So those are our drivers covered off. One thing that I do want to sort of do a bit of a whip round on, and I'm not asking for money, is I want to get everybody's opinions, everybody's thoughts on the end of race procedure. and what happens, because I just want to give everybody just a moment or two just to say how they felt about it, what they feel should have happened, and just just give us your views on it. So so far, go to first. I can see you sort of like lumbering up, ready for something. So this should get juicy.
My opinion is, the minute that they couldn't move Daniel's car out, it should have been an immediate red flag. We saw this in F2 and we saw this in F3. Within 1 to 2 laps, if they couldn't move the car, it's a red flag. They should have adapted that into F1. We've seen a single lap shootout. We've seen a 5-lap shootout. And when Daniel retired, there was about 5 to 6 laps left of the race. So I could see if they couldn't get it within 1 lap, then yeah, take it out. They delayed everything. And I don't know what's happening, but the stewards were being very, very slow on everything, on calls, not just F1, but you saw it F2 and F3. There's even penalties that were awarded to drivers that weren't even meant to be happening. It was just an absolute mess this weekend from the FIA and steward side. It should have been a red flag. We should have done at least a 4-lap shootout and go from there. People's tire strategies were compromised with the pits. It was just a mess. And like I said, should have been a red flag within 1 to 2 laps, do a shootout, no delay.
Fair enough. Yeah, okay. Rach, what do you think?
So I can kind of understand why they did what they did. It's not like there was barrier issues. It's not like there could have been a red flag. If they did that, I would have been like, yes. But also, like, with what they did do, I was also kind of like, okay, understandable why they chose this. I do think it's just so, it just, like, it doesn't even feel like a motorsport when you finish behind a safety car that's leading a parade. So I wish there was something that they could do about, like, end of race procedures. I don't really know what that would be. But like in this case, that's the rules. That's how they are. And they didn't call the red flag. And I was, you know, kind of like, okay, this is fine. I don't know. Yeah. Anyways. So I was like, I understand why they're doing what they're doing here, but I do wish there was some sort of new rule maybe in the years to come about end of race procedures. Cause it just doesn't feel like satisfying or right that they end behind, like, in a parade. Basically they're like, okay, let's go. There's no opportunity in those last laps for anything to happen, and I don't think that's entirely fair, but I think the call that they made today, I understood why they did that.
Yeah, that's it's I'm not even gonna say my bet yet, because Warren, I want to get your views on it first.
No, I agree with Sophia. You said earlier, they've been slow all year. They've been like overly cautious all year on should there be like the broadcast crew, everybody that's watched be like, all right, when's the safety car coming? And it's like 20 seconds late, 30 seconds late. We saw it in the first instance earlier in the race today. They're just, the race directors are so cautious this year because of what happened in Abu Dhabi last year. They just don't want to make any mistake, but then they end up having this happen. And I said in the grid talk thing, bring back Massey more as a joke to get some people riled up. But seriously, if Michael Massey is the race director today, that race is finishing under a green flag. Like he understood now that the popularity of F1, it's an entertainment product, and an entertainment product needs to finish under a green flag race. Like that's probably going to anger a lot of people out there, the old school F1 fan or the old one, but guess what? It's entertainment. It wasn't fun knowing when the safety car came out at lap 48 that we're going to have to watch a parade for the last 6 laps. That's not fun. So it's entertainment. You want to be entertained. And so if they red flag it, and which if it could have gone to the standing start. Also, isn't there a rule where it doesn't have to go to a standing start? They could still do a rolling start if they want to keep the integrity of the field. Why that could have been brought up, and they could have done that. It doesn't have to be a standing start the whole time. If I'm right, it's when it's up to the stewards or race director's decision. So discretion. So if you want to keep some integrity of what it is, if you want to make some fairness, then just do a rolling start. And that could, for a 2-lap shootout, that would be great. Like, It's entertainment at the end of it. That's what it's entertainment. We want to be entertained. Nothing about the last five laps, the last 10 minutes of that was entertaining other than talking about if the safety car is going to come in. Like NASCAR, I'm not a big NASCAR guy. I might watch the beginning of the Daytona 500, the end, and a couple of races here or there, depending on. But they do something very American called overtime racing, where they do a green, white checkered, which is a green flag, a white flag, and a checkered flag. And if there's two yellow flags in there, the race is done. So you get two chances on a restart because there could be some big crashes. And when the white flag waves, whatever the next flag is, they can decide if there's a crash in the back of the field, they could still finish to the checkered flag, but they can decide what's going on. It's pretty much just a two-lap shootout, which is, again, entertainment. And it's entertaining, a way to finish the race. And today, again, not entertaining. And I think people forget F1 is entertainment.
I think that's very well said, Warren. And yeah, I think folks are on the same wavelength, the same page here. My view on it, for what it's worth, is much like what we've all just said. As soon as that car was unable to move, because I believe it was stuck in gear, and the second we had to get a recovery vehicle on track, that should have been it. That should have been a red flag. I don't care how slow those cars are going. All it takes is one driver to slightly accelerate, coming, especially as it was on the exit of, I think, the second Lesmo. All it takes is one driver to slightly accelerate, dip their wheel on the curb and spin, and then, you know, we saw it with Jules Bianchi, and you know, we know how horrible that can be. I know the conditions are different, but the point is, it's about safety and it's about protecting people. So for me, because as soon as when I saw where that McLaren had stopped, I thought that has to be a safety car, not a VSC. That has to be a safety car to take them on a line around it. Because a VSC, they can obviously still, you know, do whatever, and they're going quicker. And I also think the reason we had a safety car for that, but a VSC for Vettel, Vettel was fully off the track. He was on the grass and he was close to an escape road. So and his car was able to move. It was easier to move. It should have been a red flag. No questions asked. It's not. I know that obviously we want to see racing and all the rest of it. And I think this would have A, helped that, but also aided the safety element. Because, so like you said, when the marshals were sort of standing there going, check on that, and just not able to move the car, it was, you know, it was at that point, it should have been red flags out, everybody back to the pits, line up in whatever order, get that car, get the tractor out, get that car off the track, you know, you get it back onto one of the recovery roads, get the tractor off the track, the marshals back in their posts, everybody back out, standing start, off we go. That's what should have happened. And I also think that then, not so much setting a precedent, but there needs to be a rule for this, because F1 is very big on safety and has made great strides in safety in recent years. But they really dropped the ball today, I think. Really dropped the ball.
I think it's also hypocritical as well. This is probably very controversial, because the amount of bosses and fans are like, why do we have to finish under safety car? Like, it's literally a opposite of Abu Dhabi. Like, people saying, why can't we finish under the safety car? Like, I find it quite interesting how some fans have turned. And this is probably controversial, and I'm all for it, like, coming at me. But, like, how these fans are reacting, and some of these bosses, they only will go one way when it benefits them, but then the minute it doesn't benefit them, they're like all against it. Like, again, Abu Dhabi, like, they could have done safety car, but then people will kick off because obviously it's like Warren said, it is a show. It's a, like, it's an event, it's entertainment. So we tried to do that today. And then you have the other side kicking off saying, like, why finish under a safety car? Like, it should have been ready to go. Like, you'll never win whatever decision is made by the FIA. But things is that I think they should have red flagged their damage limitations and not finished on the safety car for this incident. Abu Dhabi maybe probably done red flag and then do a rolling start, because you can do rolling starts. We've seen that before in F1, F2, and F3 after a red flag. You don't have to do a standing start. Do a simple formation lap that doesn't count to the lap limits and then go for a rolling start. And that's when unlapped cars can unlap themselves as well, because the safety car as well came in at an awkward time and could not pass drivers, and the lighting situation going on, the green, the yellow, like people getting stuck in between. Yeah. Sorry. I just wanted to say that one as well.
No, absolutely. Yeah. No, it's, yeah, it's, I think you made a very good point about it being quite hypocritical. So, yeah. So I know that was not so much a somber note, but perhaps got a bit more sort of serious. I just thought given go on.
I just found a really cool stat, and it shows how many races it took to score a point for Williams. It took George Russell 48 races to win any points. Nicholas Latifi 28. Robert Kubica 11. Alex Albon 3. And Nick DeVries has done it
1. There we are.
George Russell, golden boy, 48 races for him to get a point. And Nick's just done it in 1.
Wow.
I mean, Nick DeVries and Mercedes 2023 confirmed.
He's a reserve driver, isn't he? Yeah.
For Williams, obviously, Aston Martin and Mercedes. Basically, everybody except McLaren. And McLaren have got, oh yeah, Oscar Piastri.
That's crazy.
Who saw that one coming, eh? So, yeah. So, let's start to bring things to a bit of a close for the main show. First of all, I'd just like to thank all my lovely guests for coming on today. Just to give you a quick chance to promo yourselves. So, first of all, Warren, Rachel, which one of you would like to do the honors?
I think Warren, he's got this.
You want me to do it? All right. We are cousins. We're called the Paddock Pals. That's the name we came up with. We are out. We're actually going to record a little bit later after this, after the NFL gets NFL is over with, but we do reviews, recaps, and we'll do some midweek episodes. And we don't have any in there. We just talk all the F1 on, and we do a lot of off track F1. Like if you might like who the drivers are dating, we'll say who's at the races there, their significant others at the races. But we'll get into that. Lando gave us a lot of content the last couple of weeks, so thank him. We just like to have fun with it. So we're the Paddock Pals. Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you get your podcasts at.
Lovely. Thank you both. And Sophia, obviously you and I are both part of Everything F1. Go on, over to you.
Yep. So you can find all our social medias at Everything F1 or join EF1. It's Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, all of it. We have a website, www.everythingf1, where we post content daily, not just F1. Got F2, F3. We're doing an IndyCar special for today for the finale. We also have a podcast that we film live on Tuesdays in the evenings around 8:30 p.m. UK time. And then it gets released on Wednesdays on all streaming platforms. And that's at Everything F1 as well.
Yes. Totally. Thank you. So obviously I'm part of Everything F1 as well, as Sophia said. So just to round things out, just like to say that Grid Talk is available on YouTube, where most episodes are recorded live, such as this one, as well as Amazon Fire, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Music, Verbal, Omni Studio, and Pocket Casts. Just search for Formula One Grid Talk for our back catalogue of shows with previews and reactions to qualifying and both race results. Please also consider supporting the channel on Patreon so we can get better mics, lights, and recording equipment. You can get your hands on some official Grid Talk merch at f1chronicle.com/store. Apparently, there's been demand to have my face on a mug. God help whoever asked for that. Please also do make sure that you are subscribed so you're the first to know when each new weekly episode is released. And if you listen on YouTube, please hit the like button and also hit that bell icon so you get notified every time we go live. We'll be back in 2 weeks to preview the Singapore Grand Prix. Thank you very much for listening, watching, and goodbye.